Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the stupendous Suzanne Cabral, the great Gavin, and the electrifying L Owls. Today, we have Wen and myself, Ange, interviewing Shane Hensley and Jody Black of Pinnacle Entertainment Group, and we're going to talk about the current Kickstarter for Savage Worlds Adventure Edition. Welcome to the Gnomecast to Shane Hensley, CEO of Pinnacle Entertainment Group, and Jody Black, COO of Pinnacle Entertainment Group. I want to congratulate you guys for Savage Worlds Adventure Edition funding in 6 minutes. As of this recording, you're closing in on $300,000 in funding? And with the Kickstarter running through Wednesday, November 14th, you've still got lots of room to hit all of your currently announced stretch goals? Jody and Shane, could you give us guys a brief history of Savage Worlds and your involvement with it?
Okay, so years ago, 20-some years ago, we made a game called Deadlands, and we now call that Deadlands Classic. It was a different system. It was a system really designed from the early 90s, far more complex. And eventually, we wanted to do a miniatures game based on that, and that became a game called The Great Rail Wars. And that needed to be a much simpler, faster system, and especially, of course, accommodate miniatures. So the system for that got pared down, simplified, streamlined, and became kind of a hit. People really liked it. We saw both genders liked it. You know, everybody seemed to enjoy it. And years later, when the D20 craze and boom and bust cycle happened, we thought about turning that into its own RPG. Our Deadlands Classic game was getting a little heavy for the time, given the direction of RPGs, and the Rail Wars system was still holding up. So I did this, I've written about it a few times, but I did this Midwest Odyssey, I called it, where I visited a lot of friends in the Midwest. I tested it primarily with Weird Wars, one of our other settings. And it kind of came together, and I really, really thought, you know, I think this could work. You asked for the story, so I'm going to actually give you the whole story. Things were actually pretty bad right then. It was the D20 bust, stores weren't ordering stuff. Our fan base for Deadlands thought we had switched to D20 rather than dual statting, which is what we had actually done. So I decided I wanted to make the game I wanted to play, and then I was going to go work in software. So I wrote Savage Worlds, and miracle of miracles, it became a hit and kept going. So here I thought this was going to be the last thing I ever did, and it became, you know, the genesis of all this other stuff. And since then, we've gone through a few editions, but it's essentially the same game it was way back in 1998 when it was Great Rail Wars. And then I was fortunate enough later on through this to meet Clint and Jody. And Jody, why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, so I started as a playtester with Clint, you know, saying, hey, Shane talked about this thing on the forums, and I want you to run through this little scenario with me where I'm just going to have you be the only player, and I'm going to throw a whole lot of zombies at you. And we're going to see what happens with these like mass battle rules. And I'm like, sure, I'm going to die in like 5 seconds, right? But no, we had a great time. And it's probably one of the few times that we successfully played like a one-on-one, you know, RPG, just two people, one GM, one player. And it went great. And so that was when we were kind of like, yeah, this is good. So we kind of started getting our game group into it, playing more games with it. I started as an editor and got, you know, into it that way. And then Shane was noticing that, you know, hey, she knows a little bit about marketing things. So now I started marketing, then production, then COO, so that I can handle kind of the nuts and bolts of making the games get to people. And so he can focus on writing the games and staying on that creative side of things. And I still get to be creative sometimes with the editing. That's fun.
That's really cool. And the marketing is a really important aspect of the whole, you know, getting games to people thing. Wen, why don't you take it with some questions?
Yeah, sure thing. So I kind of wanted to start off with, you know, can you talk a little bit more about Savage World and the tone of faster, more furious, more fun for the people who maybe haven't played Savage Worlds before?
Yeah, I'll take that one. So when and I mentioned we dual statted our Deadlands games for a while for D20, and this would have been the essentially D&D 3.0, 3.5, right? And while that game is fantastic for what it does, and we enjoyed it a lot, it did take an awful lot of preparation. There was a lot of tracking during the game and so forth. And myself and all my friends just didn't have a whole lot of time to game, but gaming was still super important to us. It was something, you know, it was just, you know, it's in our DNA. We have to game. We have to play RPGs.
Hell yeah.
And so as we were thinking about the Great Rail Wars, turning that into an RPG system, one of the big goals was to make it easy for the GM to manage, not just to create, but also to manage during play. And since the original game was more miniatures focused than this one, that became kind of easy. Figures were up, down, or off the table. You created the stats you wanted for the bad guys rather than having to create them like characters. You know, simple things like that, which, you know, is maybe a bit old hat now, but weren't so much then. And that really led to this whole idea of, you know, let's get to the story we want to tell and these big dramatic events and not worry so much about, you know, is this a plus one or a plus two? That's in there too, right? I mean, that's my job. But
yeah,
you can really just play and for the most part, ignore all that if you need to.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I have been talking about with some people since the Kickstarter launched was Savage Worlds has all of the crunch that I need in order to know definitively whether I've succeeded or failed. But when it comes to this story, it can get out of the way, you know, or support it, you know, either way, whatever people prefer. So that's what I really appreciate about it.
Yeah, you know, there's a great example. I'll try to make it quick since we have limited time here. But I was at Genghis Khan one time with the Rocky Mountain Savages and the great conventions that you guys put on up there. And we were playing a Weird Wars Rome game with Neil Hyde. And it was all narrative. You know, we're just talking, we're in character, we're having fun. And then it gets to this big scene where we're ambushed by these snake people. And it was very much like, if you know history, it was very much like a Roman battalion fighting a bunch of Germans, right? It was the savage hordes versus the smaller, more organized group. And we could have winged it. And had we done so, we probably just would have lost or been given a victory that we might not have deserved. But that's when we actually broke down, did the crunchy bits, and played it out exactly. And that actually made it really exciting because there was no guarantee of victory or failure, right? It was right. Whatever it was going to be. That was really cool to us.
Oh, yeah. That's what I love, too. And when you can switch back and forth with it feeling more seamless, like that's when you know the logistics are right, when you don't see them happening. So that's the best. Kind of going on that, one of the things I noticed on the Kickstarter page this morning is that you specifically call out, you know, the tactical combat rules, but also the narrative elements that are involved in Savage World Adventure Edition. Maybe Jody, maybe if you want to speak to the narrative side of things, you know, that's the place that I love to be. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we've already had the interludes in there from our previous editions. So that is still in there. And I think that's an aspect of the game that doesn't get used often enough by a lot of the games that I get to sit in on at, you know, conventions I get the honor to go to. And mostly those are tight focused games anyways. So the interludes are great because you can just in a quick way, just a play of cards. It's like you draw one card and it kind of gives you something to spur a little bit of backstory that adds more flesh to your character. You know, you've got stats down there. You've got a good hook for your character with those hindrances. But
yeah,
how has that actually added to your group? Or how does that add to your character's backstory? How does that right. impact what's going on in your character's head right now? Because I feel like that's, you know, the head game is where it's really interesting to me for all of the characters. And I know that you like to keep like a whole character journal of, you know, writing
oh,
about
yeah.
your characters. So it's like, yeah, that's to me where it's really fascinating to explore these different characters and how they interact with each other, because it gives you a chance to live another life, right? Mm-hmm. This is the one life that we get to live in. But with our characters, we get to explore different aspects of different personalities. We can take on different roles in society. We can, you know, just become, I think, better people because we get to try those on. And if all you're ever going to do is hack and slash, you know, I am fine with that. You know, sometimes I just need to kill something in game so I don't take it out on my husband and children or Shane. Yeah. But, but you know, sometimes you want to get into your character and kind of feel for that. So, you know, the interludes are just one example of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think, Shane, is there anything new in the adventure?
Yeah, I can add on to that. And especially since we've got Wynn here, you know, I was lucky enough to play some narrative style games with Wynn several times over the last couple of years, and some other people too, but it stuck with me and I really enjoyed the experience. There were some things that I don't care as much for and I wouldn't put into Savage Worlds, but there was a lot that was just really positive and I wanted to try to incorporate. So for example, there are little things in this edition that make huge differences. So we used to have something called tests of wills and tricks, and they were fairly well defined, but the results weren't as good as we wanted them to be. So now the results are really good, but more importantly, they're just called tests and support, which is the positive version of it. And you can use any skill you want to help or hinder your opponent, to help your allies hinder your opponents, right? And in doing so, you describe how it works. So you can say, I'm going to spout off a bunch of scientific mumbo jumbo to distract the goon, right?
Nice.
And the GM goes, okay, that makes sense. And then you make your roll and you get your effect. And that's really cool. And that's not a hard to find thing. Here's how you use the science skill to confuse someone. That would be ridiculous, right? So that's in there. There was another thing that happened when I used to play with my kids. When my son was really little, we were playing D&D. I had Dwarven Forge dungeon tiles and miniatures and all that kind of stuff. And my youngest son, who's pretty crazy, would say stuff like, your dad, I want to grab the goblin by the head and I'm going to sling him into the other guy and then whip him around and hit all of them. Okay. And your first thought is, well, how do I simulate that? And then you think, well, why do I need to? Roll your attack. Right. And then you can describe it however you want, right? So that carries through with a lot of the chase maneuvers, with all kinds of stuff that winds up going throughout this game, that you can describe things in different ways. And the GM can alter them a little bit here and there if he wants to. But the results are a defined set of results that you can choose from, right? Which can also sometimes be narrative themselves. But generally, it opens things up a little more without losing the structure that's important to our particular game and the crunchy foundation.
Right. That's one of the things that I really like, too, is that sometimes telling someone they can do anything is too much. But when you say, okay, you can do this support and here are some outcomes that help you like think about what you want to do or how you want to do it or whatever, I think that's really, really valuable, especially because in my opinion, Savage Worlds does a great job, at least the prior edition, which I played. I haven't played Suede yet, but straddling the line between what I consider a more traditional RPG that's very stat and combat based and a narrative game.
Yeah. Well, that's the goal. So I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
And I think we've improved upon that in this edition significantly.
I think one of the things I've always liked about Savage Worlds is the ability to, you know, okay, my attacks aren't really going to do much to this personal, you know, this particular big bad guy, but I can still do other things to help the team and help move the scene along.
Right. And that's exactly what I was just talking about. Those things are much better now because they weren't as good as I wanted them to be in the previous edition. So if you enjoyed that before, I think you'll like it even more.
Yeah. I'm excited to find out what you've put in the new game, because like I said, that was always something I enjoyed because it's, I always get frustrated when I'm in a game and a player just throws their hands up in the air. I can't do anything because their one attack that they think they're good at is not working. Well, do something else. Do something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I've seen that at so many games too, you know, like not even Savage Worlds. I mean, cause that can happen in our game too, but you know, any other type of game, it's like the character or the person who sits down and says, okay, well, I've tried this 3 times. It's not working. I'm just going to sit over here and suck my thumb, you know, because I can't, my character, this is just not the best situation for my character, you know? And it's like, yeah, your time is coming, I guess. No, we wanted that person to be effective too, you know, even if you have to taunt your way out of it or, you know, describe, you know, there's something you can use with this test and support. Thanks, Jane. I had forgotten about that at the moment.
Sure.
Perfect. Well, maybe let's roll into talking about, you've got 15 years of playing and feedback and all of this. So maybe let's just chat about the progression, the differences that you see, maybe something that you either had to revise or take out because it just wasn't working, or something brand new that you added in that we've not seen before. Jody, why don't you kick us off?
Well, for taking out, that would be charisma. that's kind of a staple in the RPG industry. You know, it's like almost every game has some way to rank how you relate to others, basically. you know, mm-hmm. whether that's through how you actually look physically or how socially you can get along with others, that's always still kind of been some kind of measured statistic. And we kind of wanted to take that out because not only did our game system, it didn't need it. You know, we were always, we had the edge that gave you the bonus, you know, the charisma total. And then that total got added to certain skills. And it's like, okay, or you can just take the edge and then add to the skills and you don't have this number that just kind of sits in the middle. Yeah, I think that kind of eureka moment was really kind of enlightening because it's like, not only does that kind of remove that from gameplay, but it also means that your character can be, so for example, you can still have the attractive edge. Mm-hmm. You can be attractive in many ways and it doesn't have to be just physical. You know, you can be just mm-hmm. a person who's really good at talking to people and, or maybe you just have the most magnetic laugh. You know, it yeah. takes it away from being a purely physical edge. And I love that about our game. And I love that that's how we're able to progress. I think that that's something that the world needs right now. So yeah, no charisma. It's like, I feel like I should drop the mic on that, but I can't.
Yeah, no, we'd have to pause while you fix the mic yeah, back up and got yeah. the recording going again. So yeah, we'll just virtually drop the mic.
Yeah, add a sound effect there or something.
Nice. What about you, Shane? Additions or subtractions that are really important to you?
Well, there are tons, actually. But I'll say, you talked about evolution in the 15 years. One of the things that we've seen is the game was built on the Benny economy. And Bennies are what other games might call fate points or hero points or something like that that lets you reroll, stave off damage, that kind of thing. And they were always meant to be given out pretty much like candy at the table. So the GM should award, you know, every time somebody says something funny or does something cool, they should go fast and furious as much as the game should. Mm-hmm. As we travel around the world and play, we notice GMs giving out, you know, instead of 5 or 6 bennies per player per session, you know, 1 or 2. And that actually changes the fundamentals of the game. You couldn't get out of Shaken, for example, which is one of our quasi-stunned states if bennies aren't flowing freely. You can't retry skills or tests when it's important, and which is very important because our game is kind of swingy. You know, sometimes you might roll a double one, sometimes you might roll a 34. That's intentional and part of the fun. But if you don't have bennies to try to get that on your own proactively, it takes a lot of the fun out of the game. So we've built in ways that you will award bennies automatically now into the game as part of the core rules. We've talked about it more, and we've also compensated for people not having as many bennies in other ways, like the changes we made to the Shaken rules about 2 years ago, for those who know, which, you know, is a whole other tangent. But briefly, we knew that there was something called distracted coming, which puts it right in the middle, which is just perfect. Right. So it's all kind of layered and interconnected. But the core of it, again, has stayed the same. But just as we see people playing, those kinds of things have been adjusted.
Right. And I think understanding that culture at the table and being able to influence the culture in a rule book when you don't have the opportunity to sit down with somebody and say, hey, this was the intention, that's so valuable. For me, that's like the number one design goal is how do I influence what's happening at the table of the people that play this game?
Yeah. So John Wick once said that the way to play Savage Worlds is with Shane Hensley with a beer in one hand and dice in the other. And that's pretty accurate.
It sounds appropriate.
Right. So, you know, that doesn't really sound good if you're new to the game. Well, you know, I don't want to play your way. I want to play my way. So the genesis of the game and how it's played is that image, I think. But what we've learned over the years is how to make that a better experience for all kinds of different styles and game mastering paths. But it's, you know, at its core, I think it's what you said a minute ago, Wynn, that, you know, I kind of want to know, did I fail horribly or fail? Did I succeed or succeed exceptionally well? Right. And that's really the range of things we care about. And that's what the game is really centered around. And I think you'll see it, you know, even more defined and streamlined in this edition.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. One of the things I've talked to people about is, you know, when you roll the dice and you don't succeed, that end result should not be nothing happens, you know? And that's for me, like Ange was saying, when people throw up their hands and say, I don't know what to do, it's not because they failed. It's because nothing happened.
Yeah.
You know?
And they aren't effective. They're not really, they don't even have a reason to be there, right? That's hard.
Right. And for me, influencing the story, even if it's detrimental to my character, but something interesting happens, mm-hmm. like that still says to me, you're involved as a player, you're involved as a character, you're driving the story in some way, even if it's not necessarily positive, it's interesting and memorable.
Right. And see, that's another great thing. And that's something that's actually harder for us to flame, I guess, to encourage or support, because, you know, we can support a lot of GM styles. Player styles are actually more difficult, because if a guy builds a non-combat character and then just keeps entering combat and rolling his dice and he gets frustrated, that there's only so much we can do about that, right? Now, again, our game is pretty swingy, so he's probably going to get lucky anyway, eventually, right? But I mean, and I love what you said about, you know, sometimes I do things that aren't necessarily in my or my character's best interest. I do them all the time. Yeah. And to me, that's role-playing, and that's what's interesting, right? But I have been with groups. I was with a group at Genghis Khan, for example. It was a different game system that I tried. And the mentality of the players was, you only do what is the most efficient. So when I role-played and played an arrogant elf and didn't want to help the people that were asking us to help, you know, the table was not happy with me, and I had to quit. I had to just, okay, so I, you know, I do all the elf stuff. I listen at the door. I shoot the arrow. And that kind of sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not my play style for sure. And some people really just want to maximize and push their character to the limit and keep pushing that. And that's cool for the people who love that. But that's not the play style that I enjoy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the way you play is what interests me the most. You know, that I love playing with you. You're always a blast to play with, and you'll go in crazy different directions that, you know, you'll never see coming. But there are game systems that just seem to emphasize it, and then there are others that don't. You know, Fate is one that encourages you to go off out of the, think out of the box and go off the chart, right? That's cool. D&D, I think, encourages more of a let's be efficient and get through this dungeon without dying mentality, and those affect how people play. So with Savage Worlds, since we're, you know, somewhere in the middle of all that, it's a little trickier to figure out how to support those players sometimes.
But we do want to.
Oh, we do try. But, yeah, you know, they have to make a conscious effort to take hindrances, for example, that are going to screw themselves or not screw themselves, depending on which way they want to play their character. Mm-hmm.
I could go on forever about players and hindrances and the right way, you know, the better ways to play them and the frustrating ways to play them. But Let's move on. Can you talk about the ease of use for online virtual tabletop platforms like Fantasy Grounds or Roll20? Are there any features you've made specifically with remote play in mind, since that's become such a huge aspect of the hobby?
Honestly, no. We work with Fantasy Grounds by SmiteWorks, who are excellent, just fantastic partners. And they handle things so smoothly and easily that we honestly don't hear about a lot of issues. We provide them with the raw files and they do everything. I don't play virtual tabletop personally, so I just don't have a lot of experience there. But we do love Fantasy Grounds and everything they've done for us. Jody, do you know any more than I do on that stuff?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that the few times that I have played online, like using the Twitch platform or using Fantasy Grounds, like when Doug ran us through a couple of games and stuff like that, it seemed very seamless. And I don't know if that's a lot of what has to do with how well they integrate our rules into their software, mm-hmm. or if it's just that it made it that much easier to use. I do know that there are GMs out there who do use their platforms for running the game, even at a table. Even live, like with real people there instead of over. Yeah, because it just, for whatever reason, that makes it a little bit easier for them, especially if you're playing any of our plot point campaigns that they've already got set up. So you're just opening up the chapter, you know, that talks about that plot point campaign. You've got the bad guy all statted up. You click the button, the dice have been rolled. Here's your result. You know, you want to spend the Benny. Here you go. You click a button. The cards have all been dealt out. You know, it's pretty seamless for those GMs. So we've heard that it works really well, and I've seen it work very, very fast in game. And I certainly didn't have a problem using it. It's just like Shane's saying, we just don't play ourselves online a heck of a lot. We're fortunate to have our own physical game groups that we can meet with on a regular basis so that we can do our play testing as we need to. And honestly, I spend about 10 or 12 hours a day looking at a computer screen as it is. So I don't,
that's a thing.
Yeah. So I just don't find time for it.
I know I have friends who don't necessarily have that regular local game group, so they've kind of developed their regular group through online platforms. I have one particular friend who's been running an ETU campaign through Roll20 for, like, I think 2 years now. So
yeah, I think it's a great asset to have out there, and with everything moving online, you know, that I think that there's going to be a way. Where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, you can run it even in like a Google Hangout. You don't need mm-hmm. to have a whole heck of a lot of platform there just because everybody knows the rules, right? So yep. The GM can pull your card and just show. It's like, here you go, Ange, that's your card, you know, holding it up. And you see that it's the Jack of Diamonds. And it's like, okay, you know. But there's ways that you can work with anything online just as long as you can see each other, hear each other, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think they're the wave of the future, too. I grew up in a small coal mining town, 3.5 hours from the nearest bookstore. So, you know, finding people was tough, especially in the 80s. But, you know, these days we have so many remote people, and we really see it in our sales, for example. So we don't wind up on the ICV2 sales list and so forth very often. But we do tons of sales direct and online to consumers who live in remote areas that don't have a game store around them. Right. So those people obviously have trouble finding friends to play with, too. And being able to jump into any of these VTT communities is just fantastic. We're all for it. We haven't mastered how to set it up for people easily yet, especially since Fantasy Grounds does it all for us. But it's something we're going to continue to push and look into.
That's fantastic. Good deal. Well, let me ask about backwards compatibility. I tend to think of this as an electronic games thing. But I have so many amazing Savage World settings that I've bought over the last decade or so. So can you talk about how easy it will be to use like Deadlands Reloaded books or Necessary Evil or whatnot that I already have? Or maybe on that front, kind of what's rolled into the core Savage World Adventure Edition book?
How about if I talk about how you can use it and then you can go through what you might have to change? How about that, Shane?
Yeah.
Okay. So for the most part, if you're... You know, the hindrance titles and the edge titles and the names of the rules are, unless they're new, you know, are going to be the same. So, for example, mm-hmm. there is suppressive fire. There is there's still a rule for that in the core rules, the adventure edition. There was that in the deluxe edition before that, the explorer's edition. It's still called suppressive fire, but it maybe works a little bit differently now. So when it's referenced in any of those books, or if it's Necessary Evil and they're talking about, you know, the blast power, the blast is still called the blast power. It just might be, you know, used a little bit differently now that we've gone through and tweaked it a little bit. So it's very backwards compatible in that respect. And we mm-hmm. do plan to release a free and very simple kind of conversion guide to point that out to people, you know, that, hey, you pretty much can just look at the same old stat block and use that same stat block going forward. You know, there shouldn't be a whole lot of changes there. And now, Shane?
Yeah, the trick will be with edges or hindrances that are new in a particular book that
sure.
you can't just look up in the core, right? So most of those should be fairly easy to figure out or will work exactly as they did before. If it's something that affects charisma, it's probably going to be a little trickier because we don't want those things adding up, which plays back into the whole layer thing I was talking about with support and so forth, because your modifiers will get too heavy. You'll be able to help or hinder more easily than we want you to be able to, et cetera. So for some of those, we will have to go back and make specific notes per setting, and we'll put those up on the website as we get to them.
Great.
That's awesome. We're getting a little close on time, but before we get out of here, I definitely want you guys to tell us more about the Savage Worlds Adventurers Guild and what that is going to be and how people can become part of that.
Real quick, if you've heard of the DMs Guild, there's other guilds out there on DriveThruRPG, which is hosted by onebookshelf.com. That's the parent company. So I might say OBS, that's their parent group. But definitely DMs Guild was the one to kind of break ground on this. And a lot of the other companies have kind of taken their setups and just kind of copied them and used them. And so we had a lot of people asking for that just quietly over the years, ever since DM's Guild came out saying, hey, I want to be a part of something like that for Savage Worlds. And we kind of resisted on that because we already had a pretty good licensing structure, right? We have the fan license. You can present anything you want and just slap our fan license on there. As long as it's free, it's a fan license product. So it can, you know, that's still going to be available. You can also apply to be a license, what we're now calling ACE programs. It's our licensed partners. So you can also apply for that, and that's still going to be available. But if you want to do kind of the midway step, and this is for individuals, not for companies, you just go on to DriveThruRPG. You've got your idea, your setting maybe, or maybe you've got a cool character that you want to share or something like that. Upload it to DriveThruRPG. You click through the agreement and you start selling it on DriveThruRPG that same day. Once we have the portal open, which but we won't have that ready quite yet. But once you do, it'll be ready to go. And some of the changes from our program or from DM's Guild or the other programs and in our program, the other programs had kind of a common ownership of the material so that if you uploaded your material to the guild, anybody else could have access to your material and everything was owned by, for example, wizards in the DM's Guild. And we kind of didn't like that. We want, if you came up with like the next Game of Thrones idea, we want you to hold on to that IP. So that's a big difference for ours. The creator holds on to their IP in our Adventurers Guild.
That's awesome.
Thank you. We were like, why? We don't want, I mean, we're just going to be happy for you and you're probably going to sell a few of our books. So, you know, we don't need, yeah, I don't think we need to be part of that. And then the other thing is they also take, I think, a total of 50% royalties. Most of that comes from One Bookshelf administering the program, but our cut of the program, we just did 10%. So it'll only be 40% royalties. So you get to hold on to more of your sales if you go through the Savage Worlds Adventurers Guild, which we're using the acronym SWAG for that. So Savage Worlds Adventurers Guild, go get you some swag once that's open. We think it's going to be a lot of fun for people to use. We'll have templates in there so that you can create your own material fast. We'll have art assets in there. We're going to have, you know, some of our core rules that you can use, that kind of thing. We'll have it all laid out for you when they get that portal open.
That's awesome.
When do you anticipate that that's going to happen?
Hopefully before the end of the year. That's what we're pushing for.
Awesome.
Wen, any last questions you want to ask?
No, I think it was a really cool, great conversation. I feel like I learned a lot about the changes and the updates and what's going on. So I really appreciate you both being on here today.
Okay, the Kickstarter is for Savage Worlds Adventure Edition is still running until November 14th. This episode is going to drop on the 1st, so you'll still have some time to get over there and back it if you haven't already. Jody and Shane, where can we find you guys on the internet?
www.peginc.com. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter at Peg Games. That's pretty much the best places to find us. Most of our Pinnacle staff are on Facebook, though. Sorry, Twitter fans. We're there, but we don't hang out.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing more Fast Furious fun from Savage Worlds.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It's been great chatting with you guys.
This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by all the Kickstarters because there are awesome people making awesome games and awesome content for games, and you need it all, even if your bank account is wincing. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out. Wednesday evening podcast all-stars, Brett, Tom, Kevin, Chris, and Andy get together and play games that get edited down into audio drama for your ears. Join this crew of all-star players as they create stories from the games you love. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. And we damn well better have avoided the stew this week because, you know, we had guests and John needs to behave, right? Right, guys? Guys, right?
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.